Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Media Answers Network, and is sponsored by the law offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Ken Jenkins, Chief Technology Officer at Bylight Cyberspace Operations. Welcome, Ken.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Ken, it's great to have you on. And when I first get going with the recording, I always like to let my guests have an opportunity to provide a little bit more background in terms of who you are and what you do. So the floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm Ken Jenkins. As you mentioned, I'm the Chief Technology Officer of Bylight Cyberspace Operations Vertical. I have about 24 years of experience in IT and cybersecurity. I'm really kind of passionate about red teaming, penetration testing, threat hunting, different types of adversary emulation, and incident response. I kind of consider it, you know, a hobby and a career overlapping, which is great. I'm also a retired Army officer. I was a warrant officer in the Army, focusing on IT and cyberspace operations. I spent a significant time within the Army's Criminal Investigation Command, the Army Cyber Command, the United States Cyber Command, and then the National Security Agency. Before I left active duty, I spent quite a bit of time helping build out the cyber mission force, and you know, what would the organizations look like? What would the folks get for training? That was a good way to kind of close out a 20-year career. I do like working. I do like competing in capture the flag events. You know, some of those are crypto challenges. Some of them are like hacking red versus blue type of exercises. And I find myself spending a lot more time being a mentor. So I'm really kind of embracing that. That's not something I spelled out years ago and said I would do that. It's always something I wanted to do, just inherent to the job, but. Over the years, I'm really starting to embrace and spending time and kind of formalizing that process. And then I was fortunate enough throughout my career to get some really good training with industry. So I, you know, spent significant time at Microsoft, with Cisco, and then with SANS and GIAC. You know, those are kind of the industry leaders in cybersecurity training. Yeah, that's in the biggest one. And last but not least, but I'm also a father of two kids.
Yeah, and I'm sure the kids take up the most amount of your time, and even with all the challenges that cybersecurity and digital technology might bring, probably the most challenging thing you faced in your life too.
Oh yeah, I mean the social distancing, while it's it's keeping us away from others, it's really, this is probably the most time I've ever spent with my family, like day and night. I actually advised my team to start working remotely about a month ago when the pandemic started. So it's been interesting. It's been interesting spending that additional time with my family, really getting to know them at a different level than the normal grind of 9 to 5. And definitely that's a fact.
Yes. Yeah. And I'd actually kind of like to go back to your part of the background in your work history, in your life that you were talking about, and kind of would be very interested to hear, you know, how you see the distinctions between the work you're doing while in the military and then, you know, how the public sector, I guess the non-military sector, approaches cyberspace and cybersecurity.
Yeah. So These other sectors, you know, a lot of them are highly regulated. So, you know, they definitely have a compliance component to them. So I see compliance has a lot more priority and precedence than actually being able to defend yourself, you know, in cyberspace. I've noticed that, whereas in DOD or the government agencies I worked across, can we defend ourselves? Can we detect an adversary? It's a much more proactive way of doing business. But I think a lot of that is because of the awareness of threats. Our government agencies are being targeted every day. They kind of understand their threat profile, or the threat, they have a threat model. They attempt to reduce the threat through mitigations, through transference, or just eliminating the risk altogether. So a much different approach to protecting their networks, protecting their private information. Also, the government has logical separation with classified networks. A lot of private sector or public sector organizations just cannot afford to stand up a second and third network that mimics their business operations. So I would say that's probably the biggest distinction. I think one thing also is in private sectors, like say a highly regulated industry such as finance, financial sector, people stay a little longer. They get really good at their job. The expertise can be much deeper. But I think it all comes down to leadership and task organizing, providing a vision, understanding your threats. I think the government, specifically the military or DOD, does that very well.
Yeah, the mindset that you were just describing really seems to hone in on what could be really a fundamental problem. Because I find it very challenging, kind of as you were saying, where if defenses, if you can even call it defenses, are geared towards meeting just baseline compliance requirements, that's really going to leave you very exposed when an attack comes.
That's right. I see that a lot where we're going to do the bare essentials to be in this industry or to be in business. Anything else above that, we can't support. We don't have the budget. Now, that's not every organization. I see that more as the norm than someone really trying to exceed standards to defend themselves. Or it won't happen to me. I see a lot of that. It's never happened to us. I think it's probably happened. You're just not aware. So I do see that quite a bit. I mean, if you don't know what's happening, you probably aren't going to do anything to react and mitigate it.
Yes. No, I think and that's an argument that I'll hear in healthcare a lot, which is I'm just a small practice or, a small organization, so no one's going to target me. And, a cyber attack is really the concern of a big entity because they hold more data. But, I really don't think you can rest upon the size of your organization, because even the smallest organizations now have a really tremendous treasure trove of data that could be accessed in an attack.
Yeah, I mean, that's spot on. I think the biggest concern I have is not necessarily a small company getting hit or losing their proprietary information. I mean that absolutely is a possibility, but it's the relationships they have with other companies. There's some pretty complex federations of services and network access throughout the healthcare. There's pharmaceuticals. There's hospitals. There's electronic medical records. The way they're handled, the way they're stored. So there's this massive interconnection of capabilities that if you can get into one aspect of access, you can probably violate some kind of trust or some kind of area where there's less security. And that's generally how red teamers or adversaries kind of move around. They find those gaps and flaws or gaps and seams within, complex technology and cybersecurity capabilities. And that's how they move around. And I think when a small company says that, it can't happen to us or we don't have anything anyone wants, you absolutely do. Your Rolodex is very important. Your federated services are very important. I was working with a company recently where they process vaccinations. They keep a running tally of who gets vaccinated, and they have just-in-time delivery of vaccines for small offices. There are so many places in there. If you get access, you have access to so many other things. So I think that's the bigger risk is those smaller organizations, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and actually, as you were talking about that, you mentioned red teams again. Could you actually build a describe or kind of give an explanation about what that is? Because I'll be honest, I'm not sure I've heard the term before, even though I'm sure it's actually a fairly basic concept in the security realm.
Oh, absolutely. So I've been honored to be on a few red teams, flattered. It's an awesome place, awesome team to work on. If you're a cybersecurity expert or have expertise or practitioner and you want to do things that are office in nature, their goal is not necessarily to hack, but it's more to emulate threats. And you're emulating threats on behalf of a customer. So, for instance, let's say you have company A, and company A is being targeted by a specific Russian or Chinese threat actor. So company A would like, they want to be prepared before these things happen to them. So they would go out and hire a company or a red team that would come in and emulate those specific threats. To prepare you when the time does come, it's not your first time you've ever handled working against the adversary. It's one thing to go down a checklist and make sure you're compliant. It's another once an adversary has gained access into your organization or stolen your healthcare data or your patient records or your PHI, whatever it may be. So the red teams can really help emulate those threats and find gaps and seams within, some of the compliance you may have, or some of your IT, IT products you have deployed. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I see some pretty interesting stuff when I go to healthcare conferences and then, at doctor's offices, at clinics, whatever it may be. We have went away from having these small self-contained hospitals and doctor's offices to having very connected environments. For instance, I recently was part of an engagement where there's a stylist, like that a doctor keeps notes with, and that stylist had Wi-Fi connectivity. That connection on that stylus, the Wi-Fi connectivity was in the clear. So meaning you could sniff the traffic and then you could see what the doctor wrote up. Back to the red team piece, those things right there, you don't even know they exist until someone comes in and really kind of exercises your workforce, your people, processes, your technology. And red teams are really good at that.
No, that is actually very fascinating. And it's, it sounds like using the benefits of a red team really go to what you're talking about earlier about trying to be proactive. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Ken Jenkins from BioLight Cyberspace Operations. And we've been talking a lot about, kind of some of the differences between the military and public or private sectors and, kind of what goes into security. But Ken, you're just starting to shift into, some of the observations you've been seeing about the healthcare industry. And frankly, the stylus example, I think, is a great one because it's one of the problems that I hear about is that organizations aren't doing a very good job of cataloging all of the connected devices or all the areas of risk. So I'd kind of like to open it up to you and just get your view on what do you see are like the biggest risks for the healthcare industry and kind of from another broad picture, kind of what do you think is the state of cybersecurity in healthcare?
Sure. So some of the biggest issues I see in healthcare is the increase in the utilization of technology. I mentioned earlier, but there's tablets, I see insulin pumps, stylus devices, constant evolving technology in and out of a hospital, a clinic, a lot of this isn't deployed through secure means and the vetting process to see, hey, if we're using wireless communications, are they secure? Is there basic authentication? Is the CIA triad being used? That's confidentiality, integrity, and availability. Is that ensured as we're deploying these devices? So I see that on the rise, and also the access to remote data. So as we're become more distributed workforce, there's often a need to get in from somewhere to access data from a remote location or someplace you normally aren't working at. A doctor may be out and about and be on their phone, or they may be in using Wi-Fi at a coffee shop, but they generally have similar access of similar access to where they can go in and continue working. So also partnering, there's massive use of electronic medical records across the sector. It's not just for the doctor. It could be, you know, shared throughout the healthcare industry. So protecting that is getting more difficult. You know, there's constantly a need for to make sure permissions, role-based access is in place. So I, you know, as a cybersecurity practitioner, I really believe in the, you know, the concept of least privilege or deny all, permit by exception. That's very hard to do when you know, technology or applications are changing faster than you can manage those things. Oftentimes, that's not a problem that the chief information officer or the chief information security officer, you know, could control. It's generally another organization within the, whether it be the hospital or a chain of hospitals, or maybe even a large pharmaceutical. The technology is coming in and changing faster than they can keep up with. So that's an interesting piece of you know, in the healthcare sector. Other is the budgets. As these technologies are coming in, the budgets aren't scaling appropriately for cybersecurity investing. You know, understanding the trending and risks that are constantly ever evolving threat landscape, constantly in flux. So you take that constant flux and you sprinkle in new devices, new applications, new vulnerabilities, and you see it's a very hard problem to kind of mitigate, almost to the point where it's mostly indefensible, and you just continue. I mean, you're just a firefighter every day trying to you know, put out the fire or plug the holes.
Yeah, and kind of as you just described, there's so many different concerns just because of the pace of technology growth and adoption, and then as you said, coupled with constrained budgets, because you know, I think, as we all know, there's, you know, less and less money going around, it feels like, in healthcare. You know, kind of from your perspective, what are some helpful ways to prioritize those different issues, or, you know, what can organizations do to, you know, help think about a plan so all those, you know, what can feel like overwhelming issues can be broken down maybe into pieces where all of a sudden now it feels like you can actually start tackling it and enhancing your security posture?
Yes, I'd probably be stating a bit of the obvious if I said understanding your threats and risks. But it all goes back to that, right? It's understanding your threat model, who's targeting me, what's in the realm of possible, and then am I mitigating those threats, am I reducing them, or am I eliminating them altogether? So that's very difficult to do at one centralized point within a C-suite, right? That takes a concerted effort across the organization. So definitely threat and risk management are one. The other is understanding what those threats are at a slightly deeper level than, you know, just surface level. It's, you know, you can open up, you know, CNN or Fox almost every day, and you see some kind of an intrusion that's occurred. I think being up to speed on like what's going on, like awareness and having it be a part of your culture, I think that's important. So, you know, a lot of these organizations we're talking about, they do have security operations centers. They do have threat and management experts throughout the organization. But I think like having a unified voice and working together is probably really where it starts. And then, I mean, with the rest of you know, the issues you may see, it's all utilizing some kind of framework. You know, when I go into small companies and start talking about the maturity, it's usually a combination of how they're organized, understanding their threats, and then applying the budget and the resources. It's no silver bullet to fix these things, right? It still remains a leadership issue, and I see this being talked about more at boards now. You know, a board that's not talking about cybersecurity is probably not going to be in business. You know, the company their board probably is not going to be in business too long. You know, if that continues.
Yeah, and kind of as you start off with, you know, even though, as you said, you're kind of stating the obvious for some of the points, it's, you know, unfortunately, I think those types of points do need iteration, just because if they were being followed, then maybe we wouldn't be quite at the same, you know, extreme level of concern. But then, you know, as you're describing it, you know, the requirement for organization just seems really important, because it's, if you've got a clear path in terms of who's in charge, who can then set an agenda, and you can have an agenda to follow, you know, it makes it feel a bit more manageable, as opposed to just looking at the entire threat landscape and not really wanting to dive into it because you know it's just going to all snowball together.
Sure. So that's a really good point. So one of the things I like that, you know, the financial sector is doing is they're exercising these things. And a lot of sectors do this, right, where they'll have tabletop exercise or sandbox exercise. But generally, those are staff functions and exercise. Maybe they war game or strategize, you know, something, you know, at a board. In a meeting. You know, some kind of exercise, but it generally doesn't bring in the practitioners that have to actually deal with it. So let's say an adversary gains access into a, you know, a particular hospital system. They get access to patient health information, and they start moving laterally through the organization. That piece of countering the adversary generally is an exercise at a more organizational level. It's usually, oh, the IT guys or the cybersecurity guys, they'll handle that. Instead of holistically the organization saying, hey, this is our problem. This is not just theirs. The adversary is coming after us because of what we have that's of value or the level of access they can gain from our organization. That's completely an organization issue. So I think, you know, exercising not only at tabletops, tabletop exercise, but also doing actual hands-on exercises where everyone's kind of in play for that exercise.
Yeah, being able to see an exercise like that happen from, you know, throughout an organization would be very interesting to see, because it's, you know, I hear the argument against it, whether it be in healthcare, or, you know, even within the legal industry, of, well, we don't want to simulate an attack or simulate, you know, an experience like that, because we don't want to have lost productivity time, or, you know, have a concern where, you know, maybe it's diverting attention away from the primary business. But then, you know, it seemed the counter is, well, wouldn't it be better to have it be in, you know, arguably a controlled environment, as opposed to having the fire drill and not knowing if your plans are actually going to work when an actual event occurs? Because frankly, from my perspective, it really is a when as opposed to an if.
Yes, I definitely agree. So, you know, in the financial sector, you know, they have this exercise called Quantum Dawn. And traditionally, it was ran by SIFMA. SIFMA is, you know, working with all the major banks within the financial sector. And in the past, it had been a tabletop exercise or like a rock drill, similar to like something you do before you, you know, before you actually conduct whatever you're going to do, right? So this exercise brings in the leaders, it brings in the cybersecurity experts, all the security operations centers from these organizations, and they actually have a determined adversary that will gain access into the organization, and they have to respond, and they have to use, you know, they have to do their analysis. They're, you know, there's a term we use for instant response. It's called pick a roll, and it's basically where you're at in your instant response phase. And you know, some of the phases are iterative, but you stick to that as you're dealing with, you know, this particular intrusion. So that proactiveness and that operational style of responding to an incident, it, you know, I think it could spill over from some of these, from other sectors. And I haven't really seen at scale this done in the healthcare sector. So it's an indicator of maturity as a sector. Also, it means that there's always room for improvement, for sure.
Yeah, no, room for improvement, and I think is definitely an accurate statement, and one that would probably apply even in a mature industry or a mature situation. And, you know, Ken, believe it or not, as we're already kind of winding towards the end of our time, you know, given all that we've talked about, you know, I'd like to see if you have a crystal ball that you might be able to look into and kind of offer a prediction as to what you think the landscape is going to look like, say, by the end of the year, you know, because obviously right now, you know, in the middle of the pandemic, there's so much disruption across all levels of basically every industry and every aspect of life that you can think about. So, you know, kind of what do you see the cybersecurity landscape looking like as we hopefully come out of the pandemic period and return to, I'm not even sure if you can call it a normal life at that point.
Sure. So I think, you know, the pandemic's done a lot for security, not specifically just the cybersecurity, but my wife, she's a ICU nurse. And, you know, one of the things I noticed right away is the physical security on all these hospitals has went through the roof. I mean, there's guards outside. As you walk in, there's procedures, you know, the PPE that they're wearing, private protective equipment that they're wearing has went up. I, you know, the fact that they've had to make investments like this to protect healthcare employees or healthcare practitioners, I think it's a very telling sign of you know what you need to be prepared for. Cybersecurity, same thing. I there's going to be a rise. There's already a rise in phishing. I think 600%. Is the last number I saw in phishing attempts. So, you know, phishing is an attempt to gain access to credentials or proprietary information or private information or get someone to do something normally wouldn't do. Massive rise in that. So that definitely has to be countered. I'm a little concerned with the Office of National Coordination on the Cures Act with healthcare records going to be accessible to patients. I think they should have access to their patients, but I don't know that the healthcare sector is ready to protect another level of another type of access for clients. You know, so I'm a little concerned with that. The structure of you know how they're going to share data through API calls and whatnot. I'm concerned with that. But I think through all this, there's going to be a heightened awareness of security. There's probably going to be more breaches this year, just because, you know, when your stress is elevated and there's a bit of chaos or panic going on in the world, you can come a bit complacent on the things that really matter because you're living in the moment. So I do think we'll see a rise in intrusions in IP or you know theft. You know, PHI information. I do believe it will get worse before it gets better. But I think it's also necessary for the healthcare sector to kind of to see this. You know, it's unfortunate that it has to happen this way, but it will inform cybersecurity investing and spending. And I think priorities will change drastically over this next calendar or fiscal year.
Yeah, and that is a lot to digest. And kind of as I said, believe it or not, we're already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Ken Jenkins, for a great conversation today.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.